some more answers after Super Tuesday. What did we learn last night about where the Republicans are going?
Well, we learned some things, but nothing absolutely definitive at this point. We learned that Trump continues to have some degree of appeal to a large swath of primary voters, now proving that he can appeal to a large swath of primary Republican voters across much of the United States. However, what he didn't prove is that he can gather enough votes to begin to be seen as the unstoppable dominant force yet. Because at this point, what you have to do is think constantly about the delegate math, that what's happening in all of these different primaries and caucuses is that the voters are actually selecting delegates to go to the National Party Convention this July and cast the definitive official vote for the candidates. Trump got more delegates last night than anybody else. However, his opponents also, especially Ted Cruz, also got some delegates as well. And so we haven't reached, in my mind, that tipping point where you say, the leader, that is Trump, is unstoppable. So we learned some things, but not the definitive outcome. So we get to wait for a few more weeks.
All right, talking about unstoppable, is Hillary Clinton unstoppable at this point after her big win last night?
Well, I think that all careful students of political math would say she certainly seems to be on the trajectory. I'm being cautious here because it is a dangerous thing to constantly attempt to predict the future unless it's just extremely clear-cut. But she seems, more than Trump, to be on the path to winning her party's nomination. In the 7 out of the 12 states she won last night, she did significantly better than Sanders. So she is doing better with gathering delegates. She's also showing that he, that is Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, has done better with smaller groups of individuals in more specific geographic settings, but that she seems to be appealing to a larger swath of voters in the Democratic Party.
Clinton tends to pull big numbers between non-white voters, older voters, and women, and Sanders is trending generally pretty well among young, white, and male voters. Does that come as any surprise, or has that been a relatively consistent trend?
That's been a relatively consistent trend, especially the younger white voters who have been very supportive of him. And even if we look at the results from yesterday in both states, but especially areas within particular states, he's done remarkably well. And so one can just look, for example, at university towns. There he has been doing extremely well. The problem, as we've mentioned before, is that younger voters tend not to vote in the same proportions as older voters. So at this point, he still remains more of a niche candidate than somebody with wide electoral appeal in the party.
A lot of the political pundits are coming out and saying that turnout is higher for the GOP primaries than it has been in the past, largely because Republican voters, they say, using their words, are angry or dissatisfied with the federal government. Talk about that trend and how it's impacting this primary season.
Well, definitely there is higher GOP turnout than there has been in some recent presidential primaries. So that is absolutely correct. We also know that, and especially as revealed in voting patterns for Donald Trump, there is quite a bit of widespread anger and dissatisfaction with the status quo and the people leading this country, both Democratic and Republican leaders, Wall Street street leaders, big media leaders, just a lot of dissatisfaction out there. Now, what's interesting is sometimes widespread dissatisfaction can lead to people deciding to stay home and not to vote for anybody, just sufficiently angry because they think nobody is going to meet their expectations nor fulfill their desires or needs. But we are seeing more Republicans or more individuals turning out to vote in the Republican contest than the Democratic. Now, of course, what everybody is thinking about is what does that bode for the general election in the fall? And I think we have to be careful about predicting that means doom for the Democrats and victory for the Republicans, because it's a different kind of contest in the fall. But certainly something is energizing the Republican voters. And I think it's partly that sense of anger, but that's not true among all Republican voters. However, Trump does seem to be capturing, at least as indicated by the many exit polls that are now being taken in the states that have voted, he's doing quite well at capturing this sentiment of anger and grievances, especially among working-class voters who are trending Republican because of issues on, say, social issues in particular and immigration, but are still very angry at the party, the GOP party establishment. And Trump does appeal to those who think an outsider is a necessary person. So I think this channeling of anger has definitely helped Trump.
And so I really think that this is kind of a fascinating line of questioning in terms of this anger and dissatisfaction and what it means, especially when you were talking about potentially seeing voters stay home. I suppose that the question that I'm kind of getting to here is, when it comes to the general, you said that it's a very different animal, but both Trump and Hillary, who, at this point seem to be at the very least the front runners for their party's nominations, both of them have a lot of negatives to their respective other sides. Do you think that there's a chance that a good portion of the electorate might just say, I don't like either of them, or, so we're just not going to vote?
This is what's going to be fascinating for all of us to observe this fall, because we're going to get to see in action the two final party nominees decide with their advisors on how best to conduct a strategy to appeal to two different kinds of constituents. One is their party base, and each of the political parties has a base, that is, loyal voters who tend to turn out for and support their particular party. These are also individuals more likely to vote in party primaries. But then there also is that group that we call the potentially persuadable. They particularly tend to be individuals who don't identify strongly with either political party. And it's going to be fascinating to see to what extent those voters can be appealed to by one of the two major parties, because they're the ones most likely not to turn out to vote if they feel that the election is terribly negative or that there's not something in the policies and platforms of the two parties that appeal to them. So we really get to witness the different possibilities. And it's hard to predict at this point because we don't know how the two final party candidates are going to position themselves. I think I saw a hint, though, both with Clinton and with Trump last night, and both were talking in their victory speeches about bringing people together. Trump talked about himself as a unifier. Very interesting. He was the person who could best unify the party, and people needed to wait to see how he would do that. And Clinton, too, talked about the tone of a campaign and, again, bringing people together almost like a healing message.
Has Hillary Clinton changed some of her messaging over the past 2 months to try to invoke a little bit more of the populist-type themes that Sanders often talks about to appeal to some of the people who are fans of his?
I think that I would not call it a populist appeal that she's been enunciating at this point. I think she's going to a more liberal set of appeals, talking about in more of the ideas that Sanders has been bringing up time after time. He's very specific in the policies he promotes, but she's talking more about income inequality now. She's talking more about the notion of unfairness and how we need to, in fact, make sure that the Democratic Party stands for helping to lift all boats, including those who are not doing so well in the working class.
Super Tuesday is obviously a big barometer in terms of how certain candidates' campaigns will or will not continue. What do the results from Super Tuesday kind of suggest about specifically some of the lower end Republican candidates, Carson, Rubio, and I'm curious to specifically what you have to say about Rubio, but Kasich as well. What do we get out of that?
Well, it's easy for those of us who aren't involved in this rigorous task of running for office to sit and play armchair umpire about who should do what. I think one of the ideas is that the individuals who actually throw their hats into the ring are so motivated, they're so emotionally, psychologically, and financially, of course, invested in the race that it's very hard for them to reach the decision to pull out at this point because, as I mentioned at the beginning, nothing at the moment is absolutely definitive. Now, in a couple of weeks, we'll have, I think, more definition about who's potentially winning and losing. But at this moment, you can say, does Rubio have an incentive to pull out? Certainly his supporters and his advisors and the outside groups that are supporting him are saying no to him, that you've got, for example, Florida coming up. Now, Florida is of the election on March 15th, that is, along with Ohio, and that brings in Kasich, the two states that first go in the Republican primaries to winner-take-all results. So that means that Rubio has, and so does Kasich, a strong incentive at least to stay in the race until their state elections occur, because should they win, they get, those are two large population states, they would get a large handful of delegates, and they'd get all of the delegates from that state. So there isn't an incentive at the moment. So the calculations are going on behind the scenes. I don't know what Ben Carson's calculations are at the moment, but he's not indicating yet that he's ready to drop out. And Kasich, as I say, I think will not drop out before Ohio, even then, perhaps not. He's certainly going to be. He already has been in Michigan. He'll be coming to Michigan this coming week. The argument could be, if I do well in the Midwest, I may have more staying power. These are large industrial swing states, and that could work for me, trying to cut through an unlikely but possible path to the nomination. So I don't see, except perhaps for Carson at the moment, anybody with a true incentive to drop out.
And I think that that's interesting, especially because last week you had mentioned that that it might behoove someone to stay in to prove that they can get, as you suggested last week, votes from Ohio or other Midwestern states as a possible vice presidential calculus. So I do think that's interesting, and also the winner take all is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know that's something that not a lot of folks think about. Everybody's going, okay, you know, Rubio, he just won Minnesota. That's his first state, and you know, Kasich hasn't won any. Carson hasn't won any. Why are they still in? So I think that's a good refresher. So, at this point, if Rubio doesn't take Florida, that certainly doesn't bode well for his campaign. Correct?
This would be a very difficult path for him, because he would, if he doesn't win Florida, he gets exactly zero delegates from Florida. That would be a core outcome for him, indeed. And as we saw last night, Senator Cruz is making a very strong, impassioned appeal for Republican candidates to come together to defeat Donald Trump. So Cruz is presenting himself now as the most viable anti-Trump candidate and really exhorting the other Republican candidates to get out of the race and unify, because I think, again, if you're doing the math, it is a far simpler task to be an anti-Trump candidate if you're the only one, as opposed to dividing up the vote.
And that's what all of the four candidates other than Trump are currently splitting.
Yes, exactly. But you see, Rubio is arguing that he has the greatest appeal to moderate voters, and the other part of his appeal, the other part of the equation, is his contention that he would be the most viable general election candidate against the Democratic candidate, now most likely Hillary Clinton.
Perfect. Any chance that that we could end up on the Democratic side of things seeing a Clinton-Sanders ticket?
I tend to doubt it. One of the fascinating aspects of a presidential contest is all the series of calculations that go into selecting the vice presidential candidate. My guess is an older white female from the Northeast is not going to select an older white male also from the Northeast. You want to do what's called balancing the ticket, and that would not do such, except ideologically, and yet as she moves somewhat more in a liberal direction, this balancing would just not, it would not benefit her by bringing in more groups to support her.